Hello there, and welcome to the Joyfully Black Podcast, where we have candid conversations with Black women on nourishing their mental well-being while balancing career, family life, and community care. I'm your host, Joy Dixon, a public health professional turned woman in tech and lover of seeing people thrive in their zone of genius. I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. And guess what? I have something special in the works for April 27th, 2024. That's right, of this year. So go ahead, save the date. Joyfully Black is going to be having another in-person event in partnership with another dynamic organization. I cannot wait to announce the details. So stay tuned and stay posted to IG, social media, and your inbox for more details. Talk to you soon. A mechanical engineer by training, today's guest has always had a way with words, which was an asset in her over 20-year corporate marketing career at Fortune 100 companies, including Ford Motor Company, the Walt Disney Company, PepsiCo, and public supermarkets. Our guest, Lynn Stokes, has written hundreds of brand strategy briefs and launched dozens of multi-million dollar campaigns and products. The story of those brands was hers to craft and tell. She is now living her own brand story and helping professionals, entrepreneurs, and businesses write theirs. So many folks struggle with how to condense their messaging into a few key points to tell a compelling story. So it's Lynn's mission to help them out, to cut through the clutter, to get brand clarity and communication confidence, to attract ideal opportunities consistently. And I've got to say, her own brand story has a plot twist. Lynn is also a mixologist, completing bartending school in 2019. She reimagines happy hours and team building activities through in-person and virtual classes that use mixology to excite, enlighten, and engage audiences around a central topic or theme. We're so delighted to have Lynn on today's episode. So Lynn, thank you so much for joining us here at Joyfully Black. I'm so happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Joy. I am happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Lynn, you are a storyteller at heart. And I know that you spent over two decades in corporate marketing, working in Fortune 100 companies spanning from Disney to PepsiCo. And so could you tell us a little bit about, you know, where you are now? Because I know you've recently made a pivot into a totally different direction. And here at Joyfully Black, we're all about the pivot. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
The pivot happened in October 2021. Mm-hmm. So I, like you mentioned, I've had my full corporate career over 20 years in brand management, brand strategy, product innovation at Fortune 100 companies and well-known consumer brands. And I was working in my dream job, and, you know, put dream in the air quotes, because, you know, it's hard to find that dream job where great team, great job, loving what you do. And was doing that for a year, year and a half, and then things changed. My leader left, got new leaders, the company made some strategic decisions, and my role changed. And I was doing work that I didn't really want to do. 2021, the year of the great resignation. So I'm here staying, you know, staying put, but my leader left, people on my team left. All for good reasons. Some went to other areas of the company. Some went to, you know, left for other opportunities. And I found myself doing a job that really didn't fulfill me and actually doing the work of, you know, two other open positions on my team. So my job plus two others. And we were in, you know, from a pandemic, we were working from home, working remote. Turned it on so that it was more now going to be hybrid. I have been kind of going in the office two or three days a week anyway because of my role. And it was one of those situations where get up, go to work, whether it's from home office or going into the office, work all day, come home, be home about six, take a break 6 to 9, eat dinner, watch TV show, and then get back online at 10 o'clock till maybe midnight.
What? Yeah. So were you working in different time zones?
No, no. It was all...
It's just the demand.
Just the demands of the job. New leaders, new direction. And then it's also, and I know this isn't, you know, working from home remote, but it was still the same. But when you have a day where you have 4, 5, 6 hours of your day, you don't have any time to get any work done. So then it's like the evening is the time, oh, I've got to send the emails. I've got to work on the presentation. I've got to do this for my leader because I have no time today to do it. And the funny thing, though, it was also becoming a point that I would get online at 10 o'clock at night and see other people online at 10 o'clock at night. So a job that was a dream job with dream people and the work that I did and work-life balance got out of balance. Mm. And so I, you know, talked it over with my husband. I was, you know, kind of like, I've been blessed to work, you know, consistently with this job, the job I had before. I had stayed there for 12 years. And I was like, I need a break. I don't know what I want to do. I don't want to do this. And so I was fortunate enough to make the decision last October to leave. And I walked away from my job and everybody was like, what you going to do? I said, I'm going home to my sofa and do nothing. So doing nothing lasted about 2 weeks. And I thought this was October, late October. I thought, well, let me get the rest of the year and then start a job search in January. And I never really did job search. I started going down the path of entrepreneurship and starting my own business, doing marketing consulting and telling stories and helping other people tell their story. And with a little bit of side of mixology as a chaser. So that's my story plot twist. But yeah, now I am helping people get clarity on telling their story and how that can lead to their next chapter and trying to, you know, chase joy and chase their dreams.
That is so awesome. And you know, mentioned about helping people get clarity. And so I'm really curious, you know, there's so many people reevaluating their careers, especially after a pandemic, just like you and similar to your position, their mm-hmm. purpose, essentially the paths they've chosen for themselves. So what questions should people ask themselves in order to get clarity on what they do, why they do it, and, you know, who they want to do it for? How do they start that sort of shift in themselves?
You know, I think that one of my philosophies is that, you know, we tend to make things more difficult than they have to be across the board. And everything that we do, we tend to think that the answer is some altruistic, lofty goal, when a lot of times it's, you know, right in front of us. So, and one of the things that, you know, I'm in my midlife stage. I'm a Gen Xer, love marketing, love cohort groups, target audiences, people. That's what I, you know, built my career on. And what I found is that in having a lot of conversations with people midlife, over 40, 45 plus, is that everybody's kind of in this reevaluation. And some of that might be driven by pandemic as well. The challenge is that whereas it can happen at 18 and in your 20s, but when you get to 40, you've got life experience, you've got professional experience, you've got relationship experience, you may have, you know, married, divorced, taking care of parents, raising children, you know, working at your job, functional knowledge, leadership knowledge, mentorship knowledge. And what's happening is that I'm finding that a lot of people can do a lot of things. And so to your point about the clarity, how do you pick the one or two things that you want to zero in on? The first thing I start with is, what are the things and what is the thing that, you know, you enjoy doing? You know, and if you had to talk about it 40 hours a week, what is that that you don't have any problem talking about? So if you're an accountant and you love numbers, then maybe it is about teaching other people accounting basics. But if you're in accounting, if you're an accountant, but you also knit on the side, it might be about knitting because you love knitting and you want to share knitting. So the first place is, you know, what do you really enjoy doing? The next one becomes, what do people come to you and ask you about? You know, so from the standpoint that if you're going to pick a direction and try to be clarity, what are you, you know, what are you the go-to person for your friends and your group? Mm-hmm. And is there something there? So if you're the person that always in the, you know, friend group finds the restaurant or knows, you know, where to travel or knows how to entertain, then maybe if you become the go-to person for that, that could be an opportunity of some place to dig further. And then it also depends from the standpoint when people are trying to find, what is it that you want to do? Do you just want to get deeper into a hobby and have something that fulfills you and brings you joy? Or are you trying to have a side hustle? Are you trying to build a business? Are you trying to escape your 9-to-5? Are you trying to make this your 9-to-5? So I think it also, you have to kind of think about it, you know, not just beyond step one, but step two, step three, step four.
Absolutely. And what about for our multi-passion people? Is it, it sounds like the first step is also, or like maybe step 1A is just make a decision. Just choose one and then perhaps maybe give yourself a timeline. And then if you are satisfied with whatever you have accomplished in that timeline, or until you can decide whether this is just going to stay a hobby or something you want to delve into deeper. I'm seeing your head nod. What is your
Well, I think that, and I'm not sure that you have to just choose one. If you're multi-passionate and you can be somewhat creative and efficient, you might be able to pull two of them off. I think it depends on how you want to express it. So if, let's go back to our accountant and our knitter. You know, you can be an accountant and help people with their books or start your own business doing, you know, accounting books, but then maybe knitting is something you enjoy doing and you're going to have a Friday night knit session that you go live on Instagram or you record it on YouTube and that you're knitting as well, but you're not necessarily doing that all the way. So I think that there are ways that you can incorporate one or two things to share with people if that is your goal, by just managing your time and how you deliver that. You know, if you want to write a book, well, writing a book is kind of a self, you know, self-indulgent thing as far as you write the book yourself. And so you can do that in one area for 3 weeks or 6 months or however long it takes you to write the book while you're doing something else. And that book could be about one of your passions.
For sure. And I notice you're using knitting. Do you knit?
No, I don't. I don't know. It just came to my head. I make cocktails.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of like your big plot twist. And it's so funny you say that because I tell people all the time when life hands you lemons, you say plot twist. We're
right.
Direction. And so you are also a mixologist maven. What led to that path? And yeah, what's the story there?
What's the story? It's the same thing. Like, okay, my two things. Brand strategy and mixology. And when I talk about what is it that you enjoy doing, you've trained to do, you know how to do, and then what is the thing that you become the go-to person in your group about? Mm-hmm. So marketing was my day job, you know, for over 20 years in one way, shape, or form, developing strategy briefs, launching million-dollar products. But in the evenings, on the weekends, I just ended up having a great fascination with cocktails. I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky, which Kentucky is bourbon capital of the world. So I tell people that there may be a little bit of bourbon in my DNA from being born in Kentucky. But I've always been fascinated with kind of a good drink or a cocktail. By training, I'm a mechanical engineer. So I think I've always been fascinated with fermentation and distillation and the science behind a cocktail. So as we, you know, my husband and I would entertain, throw parties, I'd make the rum punch, everybody would be like, oh, this is wonderful. So it just became that thing that I became that person that, okay, if we're going to somebody's house, then I'm bringing a pitcher of rum punch or a cocktail. One of my close friends, we used to kind of bar hop. We'd go to dinner at a restaurant, but we'd sit at the bar and we'd talk to the bartender. And, you know, we'd watch the bartender. I think there's always a fascination with people making drinks. I don't know where that came from. I don't know what, but it's amazing. Like, you have all these beautiful bottles on a bar, and then you have all these little, you know, fruits and lemons and limes. And there, you know, every bartender has these, you know, squeeze bottles and bottles that you don't know what it is. And they put it in your drink and you're like, what are you doing? What is that? Mm-hmm. And, so it just became, I got to that place in midlife where I was disenchanted and kind of wanted to mix things up. And actually it started, I went to a vision board session. So I changed my life dramatically based off of, a stack of magazines and some scissors. And, I put a, you know, wanting to know more about mixology on my vision board. And a few months later, I enrolled in bartending school. And at the age of 48, I went to bartending school.
That is so fascinating. And yes, I also am a big believer in the power of a good vision board. And I'm curious, what about some of the other things on your vision board? How have you seen those manifest?
Well, when I did that, I was in a state where the vision board, when you put it down and it's, you know, you don't just do the vision board that Saturday or Sunday when you go to the workshop. I mean, I brought it home and I put it on my wall and I looked at it every day. So I didn't know how to swim. I took swimming lessons. Swimming lessons were on my vision board. I had just kind of like a glass of bourbon, but that was my get knowledgeable about bartending school. Getting organized, health, of course, health usually as far as walking. And so, and I've done better on both of those as far as getting organized, being healthy. I have writing a book on my vision board that's actually on an updated vision board. So hopefully that will happen at some point in the future. Let's see. And then really finding a job that, you know, will give me joy. And it's funny, I did the vision board. I worked with the life coach that sponsored the vision board workshop. And through that, you know, we honed in on some of my core values. And it's amazing the power of writing things down and putting it out there, because, you know, she had me do an exercise, write down what your perfect dream job looks like. I wrote it down as far as the kind of work environment, the work I would do, even down to the salary. And 1 week after doing that, a recruiter on LinkedIn reached out to me.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
With what ended up being my dream job.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I talked to her, I talked to the hiring manager, and I was living in Florida. The job was in Charlotte, North Carolina. We weren't sure if we wanted to move, but it was everything that I had written down, even to when they made the offer, the salary that I had written down.
Wow. Wow.
So that was part of, I think that whole vision board, life coaching, the introspection that happens with it and doing the work. I'm a firm believer, because I basically changed my whole life in the course of 6 to 9 months from the time I did that vision board, learning to swim, going to bartending school, moving from Florida to Charlotte, starting all over, and, you know, getting my dream job, all in the course of, less than 9 months.
Wow. And what was that process of starting over like for you? Because it sounds like between, you know, getting your dream job, that was transition. And then deciding to walk away from what was your dream job, that was a transition. And now going over to, going full-time as a brand strategist and working with other entrepreneurs out in the community and globally. How has that experience been for you, and how have you been able to navigate that? as?
I think, well, one, I'm a planner. So, and I really believe in planning your pivot and planning, but part of that planning is, you know, you have to kind of know where is the outcome or where is the, where, what are the milestones and where do you want to go? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I think that's kind of the quote that it is. So I planned all of these pivots, but still open to some of the spontaneity that happens in the midst of it. It was, there were moments where it was difficult when you go in it. But once you make the decision to walk down that path, I'm a woman of faith. I kind of, you know, the prayer is kind of like, Lord, make this crystal clear what I'm supposed to do. You know, I'm going to walk this path. I'm going to, you know, expect you to, you know, remove the obstacles. And if I have the obstacle, I'm going to expect you to knock it down. And so I think the thing is like they say, you can do hard things. And when you're in the midst of doing those pivots and planning those pivots and it's difficult, one, you got to have faith that the difficulty is only going to last for some type of season, some type of time limit. And you also celebrate the wins. I didn't think, we had lived in Florida for 20 years. I knew that part of my pivot, if I was going to move to another location, I needed to move someplace where I knew people. At this stage of the game, I didn't want to go to a city where I didn't have close friends or family or somebody that was already there support. So that's something that, you know, so I think that sometimes we're like, oh, I'm just going to go off and do something totally different. No, make some plans, you know, that type of thing. So I was like, Charlotte was on the list that if I'm going to leave Florida, I have one of my closest friends from college lives here. My husband had fraternity brothers here. And we were like, okay, Charlotte's on the list because we wouldn't just be out there by ourselves. And so I think that planning your pivot, you know, doing things that, you know, minimize the risk that you're right. not going to, you know, fall on your face or whatever the case may be. When you fall down, get back up. And then look back and be like, you know, we did it. I didn't think I had one big move, you know, left in me. But it's like, I got the job. I moved to Charlotte. My husband was still in Florida. He's got to find a job. Okay, 2 months later, he gets a job. He comes here. We need to find a house. Okay, we'll get a house. You know, we find a house, you know, make offers on them. So it's just kind of like you eat the elephant one bite at a time.
And it sounds like having a good support system was key to navigating those challenging times. And I'm sure so many listeners like you are very, you know, ambitious and ready to and goal oriented and really strategic and how they're making moves. And I'd love to hear what other support systems, in addition to having like your tribe of folks around you, helped you kind of soften that transition time.
I think it's definitely people. It's definitely if you are partnered up, making sure you're in sync with your partner, that you're both headed in the right direction. I think it's also, you have to kind of keep your eyes on the bigger prize. Okay, 3 months, 6 months out, but you also kind of sort of figure out what we're doing tomorrow. And so I think the support is people around you. You can find comfort and support in research. So, you know, the internet can be your best friend. Google can be your best friend as far as, I'm in a strange place and I don't know. So let me get on Yelp and find out where the best restaurants are around me. I think that even in the midst of big change, keep some routines that feel good to you. So support and comfort could be that, okay, I'm just going to watch Netflix tonight. You know, those kind of things. It's like, you know, when you're in the midst of transition, it's hard when everything is changing around you. You've got to keep some type of semblance of what's routine and those things that, you know, feel comfortable and familiar to you. You have to make sure you incorporate that in the midst of pivoting and changing.
Yes, you're right. It makes such a difference. And I think some folks don't always realize what a big milestone moving can be on top of switching jobs or careers or just all the different life changes that, one can experience. And so could you share what tools are in your personal toolbox and making sure that you're taking care of yourself and kind of and how you're staying mentally well? Because sometimes those transitions can really can cause a lot of stress or sometimes stress. And you don't even know you stress. So you get sick, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
So what would you say is in your kind of mental wellness, self-care toolbox?
Mental wellness, self-care, walking. I'm not that's my form of exercise, ideally outside in nature. So sometimes, you know, summer and winter cannot, you know, facilitate that, but I enjoy walking. I enjoy, Silence is part of my, you know, mental health from the standpoint of a lot of times I'll get in my car, especially like when I'm alone, and I won't listen to any music. I won't listen to a book. I won't listen to a podcast. So I am really good as far as getting grounded when it's quiet and silence, and I'm good with solitude. I can show up. I think, you know, one of those introverts that, you know, being around people for a long time, I got the energy, I'm there, but it becomes a drain. And so I am good with solitude and quiet. So part of my mental health is that I can't be, you know, after I've been on, I need to be off.
Right. So you need to recharge your batteries.
I recharge my battery. I'm a napper. I love a good nap. Nap's good for your physical body and for your mental, emotional body. If you can catch that 15, 20 minutes of a power nap, that's it. I mean, there's obvious things as far as like, you know, people talk about baths and meditation and, but I also love listening to gospel music. So I tend to, you know, and that's my thing, but whatever is your uplifting music or something like that, I take great care of what goes in my ears. Yeah. If it's people, it needs to be positive. If it's music, I need it to be uplifting and give me a message. And so, you know, that's a lot of things. I'll listen to some gospel music. I'll go on a walk. But for me, that mental health becomes a self-care thing that I don't really need a lot of other people or other things around for me to fill my cup.
Right. Absolutely. And everyone fills their cup differently. You said a lot of people talk about self-care in terms of like calming down.
Right. You know, when we think about self-care, a lot of times we think about the bubble bath. We think about, you know, sitting on the sofa quiet. And even I talk about doing that. But I've realized also in this season that being productive can be a form of self-care as well. And we don't really think about that, but sometimes taking that afternoon and cleaning out your closet, or taking that afternoon and knocking off four things off your to-do list, is a form of self-care as well. Mm-hmm. That sometimes now I'm not for being busy, but being productive, because you know, it's not just your physical space, but protecting your mental space as well.
Oh, yeah.
And when you have something hanging over your head, that can bring you down as opposed to, and, you know, there have been times where I'm sitting on the sofa because I'm supposed to be self-caring. Mm-hmm. And all I'm thinking about is I need to go, you know, clean out that closet, or I need to go, you know, do something, or I need to, you know, I need to send those three emails. And then you don't relax because you're worried about the emails when you could get up, take 20 minutes, send the emails, and then go back to relaxing.
So true. I totally get that. Yeah, because you spend more time worrying about the thing that you're like, I should be relaxing from, when you could probably get it done in a short amount of time. And then you spend even more time relaxing once you get that off your to-do list.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think for anybody that is planning the pivot, you know, I'm a list person. I like the feeling of accomplishment. I'm that person that I'll have a to-do list, and then I'll do something that's not on the to-do list, and I put it on the to-do list so I can knock it off the to-do list. But that's self-care to me, is having a list of items and being able to check them off, you know. So if anyone that, you know, is listening is kind of struggling with, like, how do I do this thing, you know, maybe make a list or two. If something is in your head and you're kind of like, oh, I, you know, this is just too big, the other thing, take 20 minutes and try it. I find that that's something, is that the hardest part of most tasks is just starting.
Yes, that is so true. Even just saying, I'll do this for 15 or 20 minutes.
Exactly.
And then you feel good. You might not have finished a task, but at least you started.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you're more likely to pick it up. And 9 times out of 10, that's 15 minutes. Oh, well, let me do another 10 minutes. It's like when you're exercising, it's like, I'm just going to walk for 10 minutes. Well, okay, let me do another 5. And then, you know, you've done 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly, yes. Because on days I don't want to work out, I'll say, you know what, I'll do 15. And then you're like, well, I'm already here.
Right, right. You're already doing it. So yeah. So I think that, you know, in addition to having, you know, solitude and silence and music and meditation, sometimes in the mental health toolbox and the wellness toolbox needs to be, let me knock some stuff off of this to-do list. Let me get busy and let me focus and do something that, you know, it's putting kind of the deposit in the wellness bank that I'm going to be busy, but I'm going to be able to, you know, pull out a withdrawal and be able to rest because I got this done.
Absolutely. It's kind of like, do something your future self will thank you for.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love that.
Good. Well, no, I'm glad you shared that as well, because there are many folks who self-care is, oh, I'm going to do yoga or I'm going to sit quietly, which can be rejuvenating.
Right, right.
The other end, it can be less anxiety producing if you just go ahead and do the thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Right.
I was listening to you talk about your mixology journey. It sounds like that lit up another side of you too.
Right, right. And I really went to bartending school more to just learn more about the hobby, because while I was working, you know, it really only showed up as like, oh, we've got some friends coming over Friday night, let me make some drinks. Or we're going someplace, you know, go visit family and, okay, Lynn, what you gonna make? And I just really wanted to be more educated about mixology, because I kind of would go in the kitchen, pour this, pour that, shake it up, and that, you know, sort of luck around. And I was like, there has to be kind of some standard recipes and some reasons why, you know, how do you make a drink balanced? And so I went for the education and had a thought maybe of starting a blog about writing about alcohol, cocktails, bartenders. And got in the class, enjoyed it. And one of my instructors was like, I know you said you were just doing this for fun, but you'd be a really good bartender because you know how to talk to people, you understand the drinks, you know. So she was kind of like, don't just walk away from this. And it really started, like, you know, when I talked about, if you want to know what to do, what is it that people come to you? I let a few people in the circle know I was going to bartending school. And actually, my life coach, the vision board, she ended up having like a milestone birthday a month after I graduated from bartending school and invited me to host a rum tasting at her birthday party. And so that kind of started me speaking in front of a group and doing classes. My sister was like, hey, I'm doing, you know, for my girls, we're doing an event, you know, virtually. Will you give us a recipe and make some drinks for us? So it sort of happened somewhat organically through friends, where they were like, hey, we're getting together, you know, with a group of friends from college, and, you know, will you do a class for us? So that's how that happened, as far as what was my hobby being turned into really something that's shared, you know, casually with friends. To now, I'm working that into building a business around that.
That's really exciting. And it sounds like, you know, a theme is one, remaining open.
Mm-hmm.
And also sharing, you know, this experience with other people. Because, you know, had, you know, the teacher not giving you encouragement, you might not have considered it as anything more than a hobby. Or,
right.
you know, letting your circle of friends. And that can also relate back to just things that are that are of interest to us. And sometimes people just don't know unless we share that with them.
Right. And I think that's where the common theme of story. Everybody has a story, but I really believe that you need to share your story. You know, I mean, that's the thing is that people, it's amazing how many times that, you know, you sort of think that what you do, there's nothing special about you or your life or whatever, but there's something interesting, fascinating, relatable about all of us. And I don't think we tap into the uniqueness of our story enough to share it with other people, to encourage, to inspire, to cheer someone up, you know, whatever that case may be. And so I think that is what, you know, this is all parts of our story. And, you know, yes, you may not be like anybody else, but you're not like anybody else. So there's nothing wrong with your story. It's your story. Share it.
What about people who are nervous about sharing their story? Like they hear you and just like, I don't know, there's certain parts that I don't want to share, or maybe it's not that interesting. What sort of insight could you provide to that person?
Well, I think that if you don't want to share your story because it is too personal and you don't want to live out loud, or, you know, if it's traumatic and you haven't healed from it, then keep that to yourself. So it's not, I'm not necessarily that you have to be an open book, but I think that it sort of still goes back to the fact of what are you confident in? Even if you're nervous about certain things, what are you confident in? And I believe you can build the story around anything and tie it back to that place of confidence. So going back to, if you're an accountant, you know, if you're trying to look for like, what do I tell a story about? I'm just an accountant. Well, what's your favorite song and or a favorite song? Everybody's got probably more than one. I hate that. What's your one favorite? Because most people have multiple things. But there's probably a song that the accountant can tie back to. I was studying for my CPA exam. And Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It was all that I listened to, you know, that's all I listened to for 6 weeks while studying for the exam. That's a story that you weaved back into the fact that you're telling people that, you know, anytime I hear that song, I think it takes me back to when I studied and successfully got my CPA. And everybody can relate because we've all been up all night cramming for something. We know there's usually a song that you can think right now, if you were studying in school, what kind of music and what kind of songs helped you get through that exam or that test.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes, you know, story doesn't have to be something, you know, fancy once upon a time, happily ever after. It's what's your favorite song? What's your favorite food? How can you weave stories around things that you're talking about to, you know, the things that you love to do or the things you want to share with someone else?
Yeah. And you know, the adage, like the truth will set you free, in a way, sharing your story is a form of self-care because you're relinquishing some of that judgment around who you are.
Right. I totally believe that. I've been toying with this idea is that does freedom come when you use your voice? Or, you know, which one comes first? Do you have to be free first and then you start to use your voice? Or by using your voice, do you become free? Because I think there is this tie between freedom and using your voice and telling your story. The other thing for people that are nervous is that there's lots of ways to tell your story. You can journal. You can, you know, you can write it down. You don't have to necessarily, by sharing your story, sharing your story might mean just getting it out of you. So you may want to journal it. You may want to write it down. Social media can be a great place to, okay, I'm going to write a post and put a picture because I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm going to turn the comments off. I'm going to go, you know, me and my camera, and I'm just going to tell a story and then, you know, post it or not post it. But I think that for people that are nervous about that, you know, do it in small groups if that's something as far as like, hey, you know, or when you're talking with someone one-on-one, and they're saying something and you have an experience that you can share with them to help them get through it or a similar experience, I think when you start opening yourself up, you don't have to just put yourself out on Facebook or Instagram. Just tell a friend.
That is such a key point, because I think so many people are accustomed to seeing the oversharing that occurs on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you don't have to do that.
No.
You don't have to do that at all. You can go at your own comfort, your own speed. And as a dear friend reminded me a couple of years ago, like, some people simply aren't telling the truth online versus maybe trying to be really authentic.
Right. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes.
And I think that is, it's easier said than done. But if you're trying to tell your story, if you are pivoting to a new direction, you know, start where you are, and you have to get in your mind, there is no right way. I mean, when you see other people doing it, you know, I have friends reminding me because, okay, I know how to do corporate marketing, but starting my own business and, okay, what you do, you're telling stories and you're helping people, you know, tell their stories and you're a mixologist. Uh-huh. Well, I've never seen anybody. No, you haven't. But that's what I'm doing. And in doing it, right. And so I think that we have to relinquish this idea that because you don't see anybody doing your thing, that your thing is wrong.
That is so key. That is so key. Because I think,
because we live in the place that, oh, well, I got to do it because everybody else is doing it. I always kind of loved the white space. I was like, I want to be the person that isn't, you know, if nobody's doing it, then, oh, that's my lane.
There's freedom in the white space because you can create your own. What was it? It's like create your own journey.
Right. Exactly. You can, you know, this isn't paint by numbers. We don't have to stay inside the lines. You know, you can be you, because I think that becomes the story. Because how many midlife, you know, corporate dropouts who are helping people tell their story and making drinks, how many of those folks you run into? It's not, but that's my story. It makes me memorable.
You're the first one I met.
Now, there are plenty of people that have left their corporate job. There are plenty of people that are making drinks. There are plenty of people of all ages doing all of that. But me owning it and coming across confidently with it, it makes me, you know, it's true that, you know, you don't really even also have to do anything different. But if you're telling it in your voice with your story, that makes you unique.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, get out of the head that, you know, I don't see anybody looking like me. I've got this thought, but there's nobody doing it. So therefore, I probably shouldn't do it. No, that's all the reason why you probably should.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I'm always curious about is considering the seasons of people's lives. And as and as you're reflecting on this specific time in your life, this specific season, what is bringing you joy?
Freedom. When I worked with my coach, and that's been 4 years ago, we went through like, what are my core values? And freedom is one of my core values. And I am joyful that in this season of my life, I'm blessed. And freedom is to a certain degree a state of mind that I can wake up when I want to. I can say what I want to. A lot of times when we have our jobs, we feel like we can't speak openly at work. We can't speak openly online on social because, oh, what if my boss sees this or whatever the case may be. I'm enjoying this season of a certain level of freedom to chart my own path. I'm blessed to do it because it doesn't happen, you know, often in someone's life where they can create something new and be totally unencumbered to kind of do that. And so, but I want to inspire and encourage other people to seek out, you know, that freedom of voice, that freedom of time, that, okay, I'm going to take, you know, 2 hours every week to do my thing. And, you know, we do so many things for other people out of obligation and out of responsibility. But then I think we do a lot of things for other people because we think that that's what they expect of us when they really probably don't. And we put a lot of restrictions on ourselves. And so I really want to encourage people that if there is that class you want to take, but you're worried about what, no, take the class. You want to learn how to swim? Go do the planning and figuring out how to, you know, now did I learn? I took those lessons. Am I Michael Phelps? No. Am I going to keep myself from drowning? Probably so. I know that, you know. So I would encourage this season for me right now is really about freedom. And that doesn't just mean living loosely. It just means the freedom to explore and to realize that, you know, we do have power. We have power to have some say so in how we live our lives.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And what resources would you share with someone who is in the process of reevaluating their lives, maybe reevaluating their identity outside of work, thinking about pivoting? Are there any books or videos or other items that you have found to be beneficial?
I tended to do a lot of music, some of the resources that I believe one of the things is journaling or writing things down. That if you're in the place of pivoting, kind of like really assessing where you are and where you want to be. And if you can't even frame out what all of that where you want to be is, but a piece of where you want to be, focus on that. From a resource standpoint, I discovered Audible and audiobooks. I was like, okay, maybe I can do an audiobook because I used to like reading, but just physically reading a book has just been strange. So I just audiobooks and I'm like, oh, I love this. Some of the resources is that if you can find people in autobiographies, especially of folks that were in one spot and overcame, which is most autobiographies have that. One that has blown my mind and I recommend to everybody is Viola Davis, Finding Me. Audiobook, because she is an Academy Award winning actress and she reads her own story, it's phenomenal. But when you hear those stories, success stories, so I think that is one of the resources, whether it's books, whether it's movies, but other people that are kind of in your same shoes, people that have gone from point A to point B is a great resource as far as following them on social media, reading the book, studying. If you're trying to pivot to other places physically, educate yourself about that. So if you've got a dream that you want to move to Los Angeles, California, study things about LA. You know, get in groups and communities about California and moving, because I just always find comfort that whatever it is that you're thinking about doing, there's somebody that has already done it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And get the confidence.
Yeah, no,
you can do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And are there any particular people that you follow for some inspiration? You need to say some extra juice or ideas? Any specific?
I don't know. Well, for this season, I follow mixologists. I follow a lot of mixology people. I've rediscovered a lot of people on Instagram. Well, not rediscovered, but just discovered people on Instagram that are building businesses. And that's just because I'm in this mindset as far as entrepreneurship. So Rachel Rogers is one that, you know, we should all be millionaires. She wrote that book recently. So I follow her. I follow Marshawn Evans Daniels, who's into, you know, with a Believing Bigger. That was one of the books that I have read. I read things from a marketing standpoint. So my fellowship is a little bit eclectic because it's more, I'm really more in a, how do I grow my business? How do I build my brand? How do I be unique? What are the systems and processes on how to do this? So those are a couple off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. No, that's super helpful. And I'll definitely link those in the show notes as well as those book recommendations. And So, Lynn, how can listeners stay in touch with you online?
I have a website, lynnstokes.com. I'm Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E with an E, lynnstokes.com. I'm on LinkedIn under Lynn Stokes, and then Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, doing new things, the Lynn Stokes on all the socials. So just either Lynn Stokes or the Lynn Stokes and you can find me.
Oh, you're on the top now. Okay.
I tried that. I mean, and that's this whole freedom. I was like, Lynn would never, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, Lynn would not be on the top. Lynn got on the top for 7 days. And Lynn might get back on the top. So it's, but I'm encouraging, I'm kind of in this Shonda Rhimes, you know, the year of yes.
Yes.
I read that book during, that's a good one as well. I'm being open to trying new things.
Oh, well, that's where it all starts for me.
It does. It starts with the mind. A lot of this is the mind. And we make things, like I said, we make things so much more difficult than I think they really are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really looking at the path of least resistance, because they don't have to be as difficult, and remaining open. So Lynn, I'm so glad you joined us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I have enjoyed this. This has been a lot of fun.
It certainly was fun speaking to Lynn today, and I hope that you as well were inspired by learning about the power of the pivot. You know, here on Joyfully Black, we are always talking about pivots and transitions because many times a lot of us don't think about our self-care until we need to pivot or we need to make some change in our lives. So I hope today's episode really left you feeling encouraged, inspired, and reflective on what sort of step that you want to take next. So as you heard a little earlier, Joyfully Black is partnering with Civically to have a self-care salon on April 27th. I hope that you will come out. So please stay tuned to Instagram, social media, and also if you have given us your email address, you will receive something in your inbox with details to come regarding our self-care salon that is occurring on April 27th in Charlotte, North Carolina. At any rate, hope y'all stay in the black and stay in touch. Hey there, lovely listeners. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Joyfully Black. I hope that you're enjoying our content as much as we love creating it for you. So if today's episode has resonated with you or you find it valuable, please do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. It ensures that you never miss an episode and helps us reach more listeners like you. So if you've got a friend who loves what we're talking about today, don't keep it a secret. Sharing is caring after all. Send them a link and spread the word. And last but not least, we truly value your thoughts and feedback. Whether it's a topic you'd like us to cover or thoughts on today's discussion, drop a comment or send us a message on joyfullyblk.com or on Instagram. Your voice matters, and it really helps shape the future of our show. Remember, this podcast grows and thrives because of listeners like you. So subscribe, share, and speak up. Until next time, stay in the black, y'all.